Okay, so we're recording. Okay, so let's just friendly remind ourselves. I like to, when we started the Haggadah Shiur, we could talk Haggadah all night long. There are many people who will. But I realized that we're only in the Pesach prep stages, not in the actual Seder night. So we're not going to do warm-ups to get to the Haggadah stage. Instead, what we're going to do is just start to look and prepare. In the years past, what we've always done is we've especially focused on people who passed away during the year, because I think that that adds to a certain degree of what it is we're trying to do on Pesach night, and it gives us a little bit of a connection and a reminder. So this year will be no different. The flavorings will be different. We'll meet a lot of different people along the way, some of whom, thank God, are still with us, some of whom have passed, but up until and including people, two great ones who passed away last week. I just felt that, you know, bringing all the pieces together will certainly enhance our Seder experience, just to understand who's here, who hasn't, and who will be able to come to the Seder. So the first thing I think we have to realize is where we're up to now. So you all took the opportunity to take the time out of your busy Pesach preparation season to come out and prepare. Rav Moshe Landau, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, who passed away 2 weeks ago, not even, 10 days ago. Yeah, if you ever drank Coca-Cola in Israel, you know who Rav Moshe Landau was. He was officially the Rav of Bnei Brak. He's the guy who gives the Hechsher, who gave the Hechsher on Coca-Cola, right, for many, many, many years. So he was the Hasidic head of Bnei Brak. He was the Hasidic. That's why Tzomet Coca-Cola is right outside of Bnei Brak. That's where the factory is. He was the local rabbi. So in addition to being the posek for Coca-Cola, he is also an individual who was head of a very large community. And 1 year he was talking about Pesach preparations, and he noted that the month of Nisan is the month of work. It's a month of preparing. And he said, what's the goal of that month of work? He says, the goal of the work is to change. To change what? To change the house? To make it springtime-like? He says, no. The goal of the work is to change, to turn from being Avde Paro, to change oneself from being enslaved to Paro, to being Avde Hashem, to become people who are servants of Hashem. What's Paro, says Rav Moshe Landau? We just started. Come, this room. Right? What does it mean to be Avde Paro? So Rav Landau pointed out, he says, Avde Paro, Paro is a understood in Hasidic literature to be a description of the Yetzer Hara. Right? Think about who Paro was, and you realize he was just a never-ending stress ball of Yetzer Hara. He was enslaved to his addictions. He was enslaved to power. That's what it means to be have your heart hardened, you know, to be stuck in that situation. So Paro, therefore, as a representative, as a symbol, is the symbol of everything that enslaves us in our lives. And so our work, getting up to Pesach, is to break free from it. And in Chassidus, Rabbi Landau said, the general geula needs the idea of having geula from an oppression on the outside first has to begin with a geula for each individual, what he calls a geula atzmus, a personal geula. And so, therefore, when we get ready for Pesach, we have to prepare ourselves. What does it mean to prepare ourselves? We have to prepare ourselves to be redeemed from all the elements in our lives that hinder us. And that's our work now. That's what we're doing right now by the scrubbing and the cleaning, so that we get ready on the night of the Seder to be ready with the proper emotions. So Rabbi Shapiro was talking here at Chal Shadis, our local Hasidic Rebbe. So Rabbi Shapiro mentioned the same idea. Chal Shadis, he said, you know, if you're going to prepare, don't just prepare your recipes, and don't just prepare your shmor matzahs and your shemis and your houses and everything else that goes. Take the time out to prepare for Leil HaSeder. And of course, obviously, if you're sitting here, you're already getting involved in that prep process. So you're already a step up. But that idea of encouraging other people also to think about the idea of making changes in your life. I'm a very close friend. My close friend and sometimes Rabbi Ari Leibowitz, just gave a shiur this week. He was talking about, you know, whether marijuana is kosher for Pesach. I found that to be a fascinating topic, right? In fact, I have certain elements in my mind that say, well, I'll add that to the series of possible questions that people may want to discuss on a Pesach afternoon. But forget about whether it's kosher to Pesach or not kosher to Pesach from a halachic perspective. It's very anti-Pesach. The idea, again, I'm not talking about medical situations for people who are in pain. That's what Rabbi Leibowitz was talking about. But, you know, the whole idea that we're living in a world of recreational use, right? We're living in a state right now that's debating this question, right? We're dealing with the question. Religion, that you can't have in New Jersey. The religious rules, that's a foreign idea. But to be able to smoke up whatever you want, whatever it'll do for insurance rates, that's acceptable. A person needs to understand that's the antithetical idea to what Pesach is all about. Pesach is about a person being able to say, I'm coming into my own. And we need to keep that in our minds as we approach the Seder, as we approach the cleaning, as we approach the whole Haggadah. We're going to see this opportunity that's there and that transformative idea. So when you're thinking about what it is you're going to do, or if you have to explain it to somebody, keep that in mind. So originally, that was, until earlier this week, that was my introductory story. I always like to start off like one introductory idea to bring to your Seder. I had a different introductory story originally planned, because I heard it from Rabbi Lau. Rabbi Lau, the chief rabbi of Israel, who is the son of the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, who's the former chief rabbi of Israel. So I heard this from Rav David Lau, but I think it's an important story. Rav David Lau tells a story about how when his father was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv the first time around, he's currently still the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, but when he was the chief rabbi the first time around, he once led a whole big, huge Seder for a lot of families who lost somebody in the War of Independence in 1948, and then lost people again in the Yom Kippur War. So these two groups were coming together for the Seder, right? And it was kind of a very difficult Seder to have. You're in Tel Aviv, so it's not exactly like you're getting guys from your yeshiva, right? And you're getting this group together, not exactly the happiest group. So they were getting the Seder started was difficult, and there was a lot of crying and a lot of tears, and very few people were actually interested in being involved in Rabbi Lau's Seder. So Rabbi Lau says to the people, he looks at the people, because again, you're talking about Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, the man has a golden tongue. And so he turns around to the people and he says, guys, this year we are about to recite the phrase, Hashat Ahacha, L'shana Haba B'Yared Yisrael. Right, we're here. Next year, we can go to Eretz Yisrael, and there are some people who want to be here at the Seder. He's talking in the 70s. There are people who want to be here, but they can't. We have brothers in the Soviet Union. They want to be here. That's the most important thing in their lives, and they can't be here. Then there are the people who are here in Eretz Yisrael, but Hashat Avdei, they're slaves, and Lashon Haba B'nei Chorim, because they don't want to come to the Seder. And so this year, I feel, says Rabbi Lau, I feel that we have to think of those people who want to come to us, that we want them to come to the Seder, we want them to come, but they are not going to come. And if we don't join together to make a Seder a positive experience, the ones behind the Iron Curtain we can't bring to the Seder. But the ones who are behind the internal Iron Curtain, those are the people we can bring to the Seder. Those are the people that we have to try as hard as we can to create an environment that's not a Debbie Downer. That's an environment that's inspiring. That's an environment that's Bechavodik. He says, let's get to it, Kedarko, like Rabbi Lau's life liked to do. And he calls the charge, and of course, what happens? Nothing. Dead silence. People are still crying. They're still, And the new Rakhni speech from Rabbi Lau goes nowhere. Says his son, the chief rabbi says, at that point in time, I was about 10 years old, and I turned to my father, and I said to my father, let's do something else. Let's sing some Israeli folk songs. Maybe it'll pick up the spirit a little bit. So Rabbi Lau looks at him. He's a graduate of Panovich Yeshiva, who's turning to his son, who will is obviously not growing up in the Israeli folk music community. And he says to his son, well, what do you think we should sing? So the younger Rabbi Lau suggests, at 10 years old, I think we should sing Hinei Ma Tovu Manayim. Hinei Ma Tovu Manayim. Come on, if you're above your age, right? Then you know the tone for sure. So he says we should just say Hinei Ma Tovu Manayim. So he starts to sing with his father. And they start singing. And at the beginning, the people are all sad. They're all down. Hinei Ma Tovu Manayim. It's got that little slow roll. And then all of a sudden, they get together. Shevet Zachim Gam Yachad. So the people start getting together. And then the song finished. And then one old couple got up. And they looked at the young Rabbi Lau. And they said to him, you know something? We lost our son in 1948. So this is in the 70s. You're talking quite a bit of time. And we want you to know, since 1948, since our son died, We have not been to a Seder. We just couldn't bring ourselves to go. Tonight, for whatever reason, we decided the chief rabbi invited us. We'll come. And we weren't so excited. But you, little boy, you convinced us to be excited. Thank you. And so now, Rabbi Lau tells us, every year before he starts making a Seder, he looks around and he remembers that particular Seder, the one when he was 10 years old. And he says to himself, how thankful we must be to have what we have, to be with who we are with, and to be able to sit together. And before he starts the Seder, he really tells the people to go ahead and be thankful for what you have, and to tell himself and to take stock. So I just want to remind you, last year we shared a similar thought from Rabbi Zlotowitz, Zichrono Levracha. Rabbi Zlotowitz, who was the co-founder of Art Scroll, who pointed out to his kids, every year when he turns around and he makes the bracha, Shachiyanu v'kimanu v'giyanu lazman hazeh, he would always remind his kids before Yantif, just remember when you make that bracha, Shachiyanu v'kimanu, to look around and see everybody who's with you. To see every single person realize it's a big bracha to take stock of all of the people who are Shachiyanu v'kimanu at this particular moment in time. He says, I know it's not pshat in the bracha, but it's definitely something that has to be on your mind. So earlier this year, there's one night, I remember it must have been the summer or the fall, and it was in the summertime actually. We're standing in Mincha Ma'ariv, and Yisrael, I know him as Yisrael. Yisrael Zlotowitz walks in the door. Now, I know Yisrael Zlotowitz from high school. He's a couple years younger than, he's 1 year younger than me. He was a year behind me in high school. He goes by Ira today, right? So he walks over, he's always a friendly guy. He walks over and he says, my name is Ira, I'm in my year of Avelus, can I down for the Yamad? So I said to him, your name is Yisrael, and you're a fun guy, and I just want you to know, I remember this one idea from your father. And I'm telling you, this fine guy, who I know for years, starts to cry. And he said, what? He says, where did you get that from? I said, well, I wrote to you earlier in the year when I was preparing my Haggadah share, right? And for whatever reason, it got lost. This is, how did you find, of all the Vertalach, how did you come up with that story? I said, your brother spoke about it at the Askara for your father. It's on YouTube. And he says, it was 2.5 hours long. I said, yeah, but on YouTube, there's a fast forward section, right? I said, but this vort was so special. He says to me, you understand, I'm feeling chills right now. My father would remind us, not one time or whatever, this was his standard pre-Yantif phone call. If you were here for Yantif, if you weren't here for Yantif, Shechianu v'kimanu v'giyanu l'azman hazeh, so much of the Seder starts off and contains within it this element of hodah, this element of thanksgiving. Set it that way before you start. It makes all the difference in the world. Whether you're hearing it from Rav David Lau or from Rabbi Meir Zlotowitz or from Ira Zlotowitz, as Ira says, it's a good word. It's right on the money. V'hamei v'nyavim. So then we begin our Kiddush, and we start the Kiddush Kaddish, we make a bracha, and what is the bracha of Kaddish? Asher bacharbanu mikolam, Hashem, you selected us from all nations, v'romemanu mikol lashon, and you lifted us up from all our tongues. It's funny, we have no bracha to thank Hashem for creating Lashon HaKodesh, which is probably a good thing, because not all of us speak it. But, if they did, they'd have to have a Yiddish version. I was once in Yerushalayim, around Lag BaOmer time, and I had a couple of hours free, so I went to the Mir Yeshiva, and as I'm walking in the open space over there, I just trying to decide where I wanted to go learn, and I hear two guys talking to each other. That Rav Ari Finkel, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Ari Finkel was coming to give a shmuz in one of the Batei Medrash. So one guy turns to the other guy and he says, I heard that Rav Ari Finkel is coming and he's gonna give a shmuz. I want to go hear it. This is an English conversation. So then I says, what makes you think you're gonna understand it? He says, what's the big deal? I heard it's gonna be in the Mamalushan. So he says, dude, he's speaking in Lashon HaKodesh. He says, yeah, the Mamalushan. I speak the Mamalushan. So the second guy says to the first guy, dude, Lashon HaKodesh is not Yiddish, right? And so I decided at that point in time, I'm going to that base medrash because I'm going to get to hear Rav Ari Finkel speak. Rav Ari Finkel spoke so beautifully, those Divrei Torah. At that moment, I was in one of the best parts of that trip, and it was a great trip for me personally. It was a family simcha. Why don't we have a bracha for creating Lashon HaKodesh? It's one of those big things. And it's the language of the Malachim. It's every word in Lashon HaKodesh, true Lashon HaKodesh, is Kodesh Kadashim. It's the language of Geula. So have a bracha on it. Why don't we have that bracha? Why don't we just wrap it in? Asher bachar banu v'rom amanu mikol Lashon. So Rav Nevinsal, who, by the way, is also an incredible individual, the great Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim, Iran Kodesh, one of the great Gedolim of our time, so he once explained that there is a bracha for Lashon HaKodesh. And it's the bracha that whereby we take the language and we use it to create the Kedusha of the day. When we mention that Hashem picked us up, Bacharbanu Mikolam, and He raised us over all the other nations, so that bracha, the language is not in of itself the end of the bracha. It's not the end of the story. The language is a means for us to be able to once again raise ourselves up and make us ourselves different. Having the language gives us the ability to be the nation that gets the opportunity to sing the praise of Hashem. And so therefore, it's not enough to just thank Hashem, Asher Bachar Banu Mikolam. It's something that's Asher Bachar Banu Mikolam, V'rom Amanu Mikol Lashon. It's the two pieces that come together that's deserving of a bracha. So by the way, nowhere do we see this more obvious than on Pesach. And nowhere should it have been more obvious than today. Last year, on this particular day, the day that just ended, we lost a giant in the in our greater community. It was one of the Rashi Yeshivas, Rabbeinu Yitzhak Elchanan, somebody I never had a chance to learn from directly, and yet had so much opportunity to learn from through the years. His name was Ozer Glickman. A lot of people knew him as Tony. He used to be a resident of West Orange, then he moved to Teaneck, and this is an individual who was a genius in the world of fine essence. But he was a super-duper Talmud Chacham and one of the Rashi Yeshiva Reitz. And he used to say before Pesach, when he recited Hallel, that one piece of Hallel that really excited him on Pesach, that really woke him up to pay attention, was the Pesach paragraph. What do we say? B'tzeis Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. When B'nai Yisrael left Mitzrayim, Beis Yaakov, Me'am Lo'ez. What is Me'am Lo'ez? Mazel Lo'ez. Laz. What's Laz? Anyone learns Rashi? Remember Laz? Old French. Laz means it means the local language. The local language. So Rabbi Glickman used to always point out to us that, and my mother says the same thing, Golus mentality. Golus mentality. Golus mentality means that if I speak the foreign language, the best I can do is get the nuance of the language. Language is influenced by the culture. So, you know, the reason why people you meet who are fluent in English, you laugh sometimes when they choose words in English. It's the reason why you laugh when they do that is because you're like, yeah, you're using the right word, but it's like in context, it's not the right word. Culture plays a role in language. And so when we utilize our English language in a cultural sense, what we're really saying is we are still somewhat, we're tied to the English/American culture to a certain degree, and we use that to try to approximate the word of Hashem. He used to always say to us, that's why I always wanted to give shir in Lashon HaKodesh. He said, you don't have to approximate when you're speaking the Lashon HaKodesh. Jewish experience is best defined in the Jewish language. And when you think about it, and you think about the deepest shirim you've ever heard, how that they hang from two words. In the Hebrew language, how often does a word yeshiva and a word heseba, or the two words that sound like they're similar concepts, we'll talk about it on Shabbos, right? They sound similar. But if you get the nuance, it's only in the Hebrew you're going to get the nuance. You're going to appreciate the depth, and there's a whole world will open up for you. Beis Yaakov Me'am Lo'ez, part of the Geula came about because why? Because we were able to identify our own language. We were able to change ourselves. And that's, by the way, one of the reasons why when we point out this chusim that B'nai Yisrael had to get out of Mitzrayim, what were they? Loshinu es shmosam, they never changed their names. Loshinu es malbusham, they had a different style of dress. But most importantly, loshinu et lashonam, they had a different language, which meant that we were able to define our own experience. Asher bachar banu mikolam, beis Yaakov me'am lo'ez, something to think about as we're approaching the Pesach season. You want to say something?
Sure.
Okay. So then, let's continue. We turn around and we say Asher b'chavanu, and then we point out Vatiten lanu Hashem, you gave us this day Chag HaMatzos, Zman Chiruseinu, Mikra Kodesh, Zecher, Litzias Mitzrayim. It also happens this year in particular, like it dawns on me, Friday night, because this year Pesach is also Friday night. On Friday night, we also make Kiddush. And we point out that it's Eichel Amaseh Bereishis, but we also say that Friday night, which makes sense, right? If the Kiddush of the Seder is Eichel Yitzias Mitzrayim, it's a reminder that we got out of Mitzrayim, the Kiddush of Friday night should be Eichel Amaseh Bereishis, because there was a 6 days of the week Hashem worked, seventh one He set us free. But we don't stop there. Because also in the Kiddush on Friday night, we mention Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. How is it that we could talk about a Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? So Rav Shechter used to always tell us, and this is one of his famous ideas, I'm hearing it at least 20 years over and over and over and over. It's one of the things he drummed into us. But he would also tell us that on Shabbos, it's a Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim in addition of a Zecher Amaseh Bereishis. By the way, what's the connection between Shabbos and Yitzias Mitzrayim? Huh?
On Shabbos.
But what's the main difference? What's the point? It couldn't have been on Shabbos because Shabbos HaGadol was on Yud. So Yitzias Mitzrayim would have been 5 days later, which would have been on Thursday. Just parenthetically. So Rav Shechter would say to us that the main difference between a slave and a Ben Chorin is what? Is that the Ben Chorin owns his time. The Ben Chorin owns his time, the slave doesn't own his time. So being able to say, I can sanctify Shabbos, which we do. We light candles, we say Vayechulu, we accept Shabbos. So being able to accept Shabbos and to sanctify Shabbos, to use time properly, is a sign of freedom. And it's a reminder of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that's why Kiddush introduces the Seder as well. Off the bat, we are setting ourselves apart with the ability to sanctify time as a result of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So again, the idea being, our goal tonight is to do something. We're going to set ourselves apart. We're going to set ourselves free. We want to be able to know what we're supposed to be thinking about over and over and over again. That theme's going to come up.
Tie into Sfiras Omer on the second night.
Okay, how so?
Sanctifying time.
That's it. Sanctifying time. Very good. So we move past Urchatz, we're going to get to Karpas. I just want to one short word on Karpas. I'm a big, huge fan of Rav Belsky Zatzal, so many different areas. So Rav Belsky told his family at the Seder one year, he says, you know what Karpas stands for? So everyone goes, what do you mean? It's obvious, Samach Perach, right? Flip it around backwards, Samach Perach. So he said it also stands for something else. Kol Sus Rechev Paro. Karpas, it's got the same letters. And what do you do with kosus rechav paro with the vegetable? What do you do with it? You dip it where?
In water.
In salt water. It says, there it is. It's a reminder that they all drowned in Yamsuf. Right? Nice. It's a nice short vert. It's a good idea. Like I told you, Rebelsky has it all. I saw he liked it, right? Okay, see, that's a good vert. That's a good vert. Ari's happy. He's got one in the books already. The Rashivas that sell, Rav Govok that sell, used to look at us and say this, I'm going to keep you here until you have something new. One year on Purim, he kept my friend Berkowitz there for I think, an hour and a half, until he finally said something that either Berkowitz faked it or the Rosh Hashiva, he hadn't heard it from the Rosh Hashiva. I have another good one for you, Ari, watch this. We get past Yachatz, we start Magid. Of course, the opening piece of Magid is Halach Ma'anya, right? We always start off with that Halach Ma'anya. And so my friend Rabbi Daniel Stein, who's one of the young Rosh Yeshiva at Reed, a good friend of mine. He happens to be Daniel J. and this Rebbe. So he says, you know, if you think about it, Magid begins with a mem, and it ends with a mem. She said, what do you mean Magid begins with a mem? It begins with a hey, ha, right? So he says, you got it wrong. He says, that's a prelude to Magid. Magid begins with Manishtana. Right? And where does Magid end? Right? Well, the Gemara tells us you have to start Bignus, Messiah, B'Shevach. What's the end, the last word of the Hallel that we say? Chalamish, Lamayno, Mayim. So it starts with a mem and it ends with a mem. So Rabbi Stein says, you know, you should understand Torah Sheval Peh does the same thing. You ready for this? You like this. What's the first letter of Torah Sheval Peh? Mesechta Brachos begins with a mem, correct. There's my expert on Mishnayos, my partner in Mishnah Yomis, right? It says, Me'imasai Korin Eseshma Be'arbis. And what's the last letter of Torah Shabbal Peh? I got you on that one? It's a mem also. The word is bashalom, right? One of my sons hopes to celebrate a bar mitzvah this year. My other son, when he was born, we mentioned that gemara, that mishnah at the end of Uktzin. You know, that again, Hashem owes liam o yitain, Hashem yivarech samo bashalom. So therefore, we've got a mem at the beginning, a mem at the end. And Rabbi Stein says maybe that's because mem is one of those letters that when you form it, it requires your whole mouth, a mouth with a mem. Right? I have a patient right now. She was very worried about it. She's having a hard time saying the letter mem. So I've been sending her notes all day long, you know, every couple of days with all sorts of, every word in the message will have an M, and I'll tell her, please say this out loud 5 times. You know, she says, great. Now I not only have a therapist, I have a speech pathologist. It's great. Whatever works for you. So Rabbi Stein says, you have to understand something. Mem is one of those letters that requires the whole mouth to form, and the message here is very clear. When we open our mouths to the word of Hashem fully, right? Like we say, the word Pesach means what? Maza Pesach. Pesach, an old famous word, that Pesach means the open mouth. Pesach, the open mouth that speaks. So when we speak out the word of Hashem, or when we're speaking out, then we should open it fully. And when we're done speaking out Torah Shebapem, when we're done speaking out the Haggadah, then we should close it. Because how we choose to use our speech, that makes all the difference in life. It makes all the difference for ourselves to think about. So again, something to think about is you're starting Magid with a Mem. Start with a Mem, Ma. To end with a Mem, Mayim. Right? And to go ahead and make sure that we get something out of it. You know, I was thinking also about that Halach Manya. I've got a good story for you. This one you take home to the bank. Right? We say, at the beginning of Magid, we make that declaration. Kol dechvin yesei v'yechol. Whoever's hungry should come in and eat. Kol ditrich yesei v'yifsach. It's one of the great tragedies that we went through at the end of last week was the loss of the Skalana Rebbe. I didn't know the Skalana Rebbe very well. But I can tell you this much. There are two stories I know about the Skalana Rebbe, and one of which I want to stick right here. Right? They tell a story about the Skalana Rebbe. In March 1945, he's hanging around with his father in Charnovitz, Bukovina. Right? And Pesach was coming up very, very soon. And the Skalana Rebbe and his father, who then was the Skalana Rebbe, they catch themselves, you know, getting ready for Pesach. So they come into they wanted to bake shmur matzah. They realized that, okay, it's quite possible that there'll be relief supplies and we'll be able to get kosher Pesach food, but, you know, to really get shmur matzah, that we're not going to be able to do. So he gets the word around. He came across some wheat that he felt he was able to turn into shmur matzah, the older Skalana Rebbe, and he and his son decide they're going to bake the matzahs. And so he sends word around through the area to all the other Rebbes, I have wheat, and I'm going to bake the matzahs. And if you send a representative, every Rebbe can get 3 matzahs, but only 3 matzahs. Right? So all the Rebbes come, everyone wants to get 3 matzahs. So they get 3 matzahs from the Skalana Rebbe. But the Vizhnitzer Rebbe shows up, his son, say he sends his son, and the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, you know the story? So the Vizhnitzer Rebbe turns around, and he comes along, and his son says, my father says, I need 6. So the Skalana Rebbe says, Skalana Rebbe says to him, 6, I can't give you 6. I told all the Rebbes, you get 3. So the son says, look, I've got a problem, because my father said, 6. Skalana Rebbe says, okay, what am I going to do? He says, vision Rebbe, you do the right thing. So he gives him 6 matzahs. He goes off, and that's that. Erev Pesach, the vision Rebbe's son comes back, and he turns to the he comes to the Skalana Rebbe and the Skalana Rebbe's son, and he says, here are 3 matzahs. He says, what is this? What's this? He says, my father said to give you 3 matzahs. He says, why did your father say to give the 3 matzahs? He says, let me ask you a question. The son says, my father asked me to ask you if you have any matzahs left for yourself. So Skalana Rebbe says, no. He says, that's why my father said he needed 6. Because he knew that you were the Skalana Rebbe and that you would have given the shirt off your back if somebody else needed it. So he wanted to have 6, the 3 that were his and the 3 that he was going to pass through to yours. That's what it means. Kol dechvinye, kol ditzrich, If you have a need, Skolana Rebbe believes, if a person has a need, yesi b'yifsach, take my spot if necessary. That's what it means to be a person who understands chesed. That's what it means to be a person of achdus. That's what it means to be a person who's what they called in Tells the klal mensch. And it's funny, I happen to mention Tells because the next thought I want to bring down comes from Tells. Earlier this year, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Tells Chicago, who is one of the top talmidim of the original Tells, which we have, of course, have a very direct connection to right here in Elizabeth, because Tells Cleveland started where? 330 Elmore Avenue. The very first dollar for Tells Cleveland was given and contributed at 330 Elmore Avenue. It is in the office right there. The Tells Yeshiva Cleveland, the famous Tells Yeshiva, was founded. I told that to my father-in-law. He almost fell out of his chair. Right? But it's a funny thing to know. So Rav Avram Chaim Levin, Zeichet Tzadik Levrach, who passed away earlier this year in Kislev, so he once pointed out, he says, you know, when you think about the storyline of the Seder, the storyline of the Seder is also, the way we set things up is question, answer. Why? So Rav Levin says, you have to understand, the story is not a halacha. This idea of doing things in question and answer form is not just a halachic idea. The Chazal tell us, Shelas Chacham Chatzi Tshuva. The way that a person asks a question is half the answer already. And that's true not only in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's true everywhere. You learned the Tosfos today? You had a Bechina, Rabbi Carlin was just here, right? You just had a test. Right? How do you best remember Tosfos? When Tosfos says, right, how does Rabbi Carlin teach it? V'yim Toimar, and if you want, Fret Tosfos Akasha, V'yesh Loimar, Tosfos gives you an answer. Od Yesh Loimar this, right? V'kasha this. The world of learning gets exciting. When the teacher turns to you and says, and now what's Rashi asking? Or as the famous book is called, what's bothering Rashi? Come on, the best shiurim you go to, the best shiurim you listen to, are the shiurim that ask the questions. If you're just sitting back and listening, it may be great when you're doing the laundry. I know, I love to listen to when I'm folding the laundry, and yes, by the way, I do help to fold the laundry from time to time when I have a minute, right? But there are certain people you want to listen to, right? They tell a good story, but they're not the stories you, maybe you'll remember, you won't remember. If you really want to make it part of who you are on the inside, you got to swallow it. You got to take it in. And the way you know that you're doing it is when you're Shelas Chacham Chatzi Tshuva. In fact, Rav Matisyahu Salomon, Lahavdil, Bein Achayim Ubein Achayim, Rav Matisyahu Salomon, the famous Mashgiach in Lakewood, he should have a Refuah Shleima, said that there's a reason why we set it up in question and answer form. He says the real goal of Seder night is to implant foundations of the faith. My friend Rav Shai Shachter always tells me, I've been to enough of Rabbi Shachter's Siddurim. And people always ask me, what must it be like to go to Rabbi Shachter's Seder? Right, there's a brand new book on the market, phenomenal work by our friend Dr. Alan Weissman, called Rav Shachter on the Haggadah, a wonderful work. You know how many of those ideas are from Rav Shachter's Seder? The goose egg. You know why? Because Rav Shachter's Seder is precisely about making sure to find the yesodos of emuna in the Seder. The most important thing that you should get out of the Seder and what you should get in from the Seder is a strengthening of faith within the storyline, and to implant those foundations within our future generations. Rav Matisyahu says the same thing. Well, in order for that to happen, says Rav Matisyahu, you have to point out the extraordinary things that exist within the storyline. It's the extraordinary that piques the interest of the listener, and it raises within the listener the desire to understand more. It's the extraordinary that when you're like, what, the Medrash says that? Right? That can't be. That's the craziest thing I've heard. Yeah, but you want to know something? It's the crazy thing that makes you remember the regular, what? Wild animals walking in the middle of the street? Yeah. And by the way, you'll understand why there was an Arov, right? And the more involved the listener is in the storyline, the more likely that faith will be, and the story becomes entrenched in the listener. And that's why we want to encourage questions. That's why we want to back and forth, because questions are a listener's means of clarifying and acquiring ownership over the information placed before them. So I'm listening to this idea from Rav Matisyahu. I see it in the Haggadah of Rav Matisyahu Salman, and I realize that, by the way, this is one of the great challenges in our chinuch system at large. And it's a great travesty that it is such a challenge. That is to say, we expect our children just to have faith. And we don't allow them to break it down. We don't give them the time to digest it. And if that's what happens, then we're cheating the children. It doesn't mean that until they get every single piece, they don't perform Torah mitzvahs. That's not our job. You know, there are certain times my wife likes to say all the time, there's a difference between I'm doing it because I'm doing it, but that's not enough. I have to understand. What do we say when we get the Torah? Naseh v'nishma. I'm not exempt from my obligation to understand and develop within me an understanding of why I'm doing what I'm doing just because I do it. I'm supposed to connect to it. But at the same time, I need to make myself there, have that opportunity. Seder night, that's what we're focused on. Seder night, that's what we're trying to bring out. But it goes well beyond Seder night. When children have questions, when we have questions, why things happen, we don't toss things out the window. But we want to get a deeper understanding of our faith, and we get the chance to do that. Which brings us to the next point in the Seder, right? When we start giving the answers and we go to Bnei Brak, which I'm not going to do tonight, even though I do it every year, I want to talk for 1 minute about our friend the Rasha, right? The Torah tells us, Kineged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, and we're told, V'af Ata Hake Ashinav, what are you supposed to do? Hake Ashinav. What does that mean? Huh? That's not what the if it was spelled lahakot with a chaf, right, you'd be 100% correct. But that's not what the word lahake means. And I used to think like you for many, many years until I was told that the word is to blunt. It doesn't mean to blunt either. It means to soften. Blunting somebody's teeth doesn't make a difference. But so how do you blunt? So I have a good friend who was nifter this year. He's a lot older than me. His name is Rabbi Moshe Gottesman. Rabbi Gottesman was the head of a school called Hank. I worked with him for many years in the summer in a place called Camp, called Camp Stechemet. Rabbi Gottesman was the type of person who used to always, he never had a problem sitting me down and telling me the history of life and the important lessons you need to learn. So one day we're sitting around and he's tossing, the way things were set, we lived in a dormitory, and one stairwell of the dormitory was the staff. And as luck had it, for 4 summers, the Gottesmans had the windows directly above mine. And every so often, Rabbi Gottesman, who at that time was probably in his 60s, early 70s, had a very fun habit of tossing water balloons at 11 or 12 o'clock at night out the window. And if his aim wasn't good, it would wind up in my room, right? And I still, to this day, I'm not sure if his aim wasn't good or if he did it on purpose. Because he was a fun guy that way, you know? He didn't care. So, and he couldn't hear anyway without his hearing aid, so I really doubt that he heard the noise out the window. I think secretly he just liked throwing water balloons into my room, right? It always made for a lot of fun. So he used to tell me every now and then, he would pull me over to the side, he'd share a thought. He would say, you have to understand something. When young people feel that they're left off from the party, when they feel at odds with the mainstream, that's when they split off. And that's when they disappear. And that's what the Rasha says, Ma avodah zos lochem, lochem belolo. That's what he means. What are you doing? He doesn't see the point because he's estranged from the community. So why should he bother to do the work? Rabbi Gottesman never gave up on anybody. I remember he told me once, he said, you see that kid, you know, I had a kid in my camp once, in my school once, that little kid had never heard the phrase, I love you, from anyone in his life. And I remember he got into trouble, and every day he would look for new ways to get in trouble, till finally I grabbed him by his shoulders. Once upon a time, we were able to do that. And I told him, I want you to know, no matter what you do, there's nothing that you can do that will ever make me stop loving you. That was a turning point in that kid's life. I met the kid later. And a person needs to understand that that lesson exists in Chinuch. Every child is educable. Maybe not to the same level as the other child, but every child is educable. You just need to find the right level, and you need to be able to do it in the right way. Every child is educable. Every child needs to be loved, and somebody needs to make that there. Blunt the teeth in the argument. Soften the teeth so that the person doesn't feel like biting you, right? And of course, throughout this whole process, we keep quoting the same pasuk. Vigadata labincha, vigadata labincha bayoma ulemor. You should tell your children. What do you mean vigadata labincha? So, you know, I have my expert crackerjack Balkori here. In Parshas Bo, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Bo al Paro, and he tells him, I want you to know that nothing's going to happen. Why? Because hechbadati es libo ves leiv avadav, right? Uleman tisaper bosnei bincha ven bincha, right? I want you to tell all the children and your grandchildren, how I play with the children, with the Egyptians, and how I gave them everything. Stop. Can you translate that word? Vidatem, right? So, you shall know. Correct grammar, Hebrew grammar, should not have been vidatem. If we're telling the story to our children, right, it should be, for what purpose? So what? Shehem yedu, or viadu ki ani Hashem, right? They should know. Why do we say vidatem, that you should know? It's not the right grammar. You know, I went to Yeshiva Farakway. The late, great Dr. Morris J. Applebaum taught us that you have to make sure every pronoun has a correct and proper antecedent. And the pronoun, vidatem, is you. But we were just talking about children and grandchildren. It shouldn't be you, it should be they. So why do we say you, vidatem? So there is a phenomenal chumashir that is given every single week in Bnei Brak. It's given by a phenomenal individual whose name is Rav Shlomo Levenstein. It's all over the place. He's been doing this for years. He wrote a series of works called Matok Lefi, and you can get his Parsha sheets from that shiur in Bnei Brak. He's given shiur all over the place. Right now, he's running all over Israel, and people are taking breaks to go hear his shiur on the Haggadah. So a couple of years ago, Rav Shlomo Levenstein turns around and he says, you know, he asks our question, the Vidatem Viyadu. And he quoted the Belzer Rebbe. I don't know which Belzer Rebbe, but he quotes him as Zatzal, so he had passed away. So the Belzer Rebbe said that when you tell a story, who knows the story the best? When you learn a piece of Gemara and you say it over, who knows it the best?
You.
You, not the person who's listening. When you give a shiur, who knows the shiur the best? The one who prepared it. When you speak out a speech, who remembers the speech the best? You. Why? Because you're the one who's preparing. He says, so you just have to understand, you're going to tell your children and your grandchildren, but the one who's really going to get the understanding, Ki Ani Hashem, is whom? First and foremost, it's going to be you. So Shlomo Levenstein adds in from the Kutzker Rebbe, on one side of my family, although my father doesn't like to admit it because he's not exactly that Hasidish, but on my mother's side of the family, we are Kutzker blood in us. Why is that? The Kutzker Rebbe's last name was Morgenstern, so it was my mother's maiden name. So the Kutzker Rebbe recalled that someone once came to him and asks him for a bracha in success, that his son should have a bracha, that his son should be successful in learning, right? So the father goes to the Kutzker Rebbe, and the father says, can you give a bracha that my son should be successful in learning? So the Kutzker Rebbe says, I'm not giving him the bracha. He says, why? He says, because you asked incorrectly. He says, why? He says, let me explain something to you. If you want to come in and in front of your son, ask that your son should have success in learning, you know what your son's going to learn from that experience? That when he goes to a Rebbe, he should ask for a bracha. And what should the bracha be? That his son should have success in learning. And what's going to happen? Then his son will learn to do what? This is what you do. You go to the Rebbe and you ask the Rebbe to give a bracha to your son. You know what you really should do? Ask a bracha that you should be successful in learning. That way, what does your child learn? It's not about the trophy, having the son who knows how to learn. It's that you want to really develop an appreciation. Then you know what will happen? Your son will need the bracha. Because what will your son learn? Your daughter, what are they going to learn? They're going to learn that this is important to you. And so therefore the Kutzker Rebbe says, then the child will automatically have it that way. So Shlomo Levenstein, he never ends with just two varts on one topic. So he comes back and he says that he remembers hearing a certain Adam Gadol, he didn't say who it was, who was talking about how he became great. So he said, how did I become a Talmid Chacham? He says, I had a great-great-grandfather who was a wealthy man. And this great-great-grandfather continued to work very, very hard his whole life. And every time someone asked him, why are you working so hard? Why don't you just retire and go sit and learn? You know what he would say? I'm working hard so that my child should be able to have it a little bit easier if he wants to sit down and go and learn. So what did the grandfather do? The grandfather learned to work very hard. And when he asked him, why are you working hard? Why don't you retire? He says, no, it's not a problem, because why am I going to do that? Because I'm working hard. For what purpose? So that my child should be able, if he ever wants to take it easy, go there. He'll be able to learn. He says, this went on. His father, same thing. So when it came his time, he also had the same thought. And then he said, if we're always working for the child, then when's the child going to crop up? When is the child going to sit up? I decided I'm going to be the child. And so I decided to sit down and start learning. V'idatem ki'ani Hashem, start with yourselves, right? When it comes to Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you get excited about Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you're excited about faith, if you're excited about mitzvahs, you know what's going to happen? Your children are going to be excited. Benji Sinkfer always says to me, it's one of I love the shul. There's so many people who have so many things to teach you. So one of the things I've learned from Benji on a number of occasions is that Benji says to me, if you ever want to figure out why you can ask certain people to do certain things, And they look at you funny for thinking it's a big deal, it's because they grew up assuming that that's what you do, right? So if you're worried about getting a minion, and you say to somebody, thank you so much for helping out, if they look at you funny, you know that their parents go to minion. That was an important deal in the house. If you need some help with davening, with learning, with this, with that, with a chesed, somebody joins the Chevra Kedisha, if it's something that that the kids saw growing up, then it's going to be something that they're going to find important. And that's that. He says, it doesn't mean that you can't do it if you didn't see it growing up. It just means you have to choose to do it. And you have to work harder at it. V'datem. That's the lesson that we bring out when we talk about V'gadata Labincha. Start not just by telling them, show them. So we come out of the Arabanim and we say, Yachol Meirosh Chodesh. Right? What does it mean, Yachol Meirosh Chodesh? We have this major fascination with the new moon. Why? So my friend Rav Shai Shachter, who not only likes to share his thoughts from his father, but also from his other Rebbe, Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss Shlita says, we're like the moon. You know why? The sun's static. Right? The sun's static. What it is on day one, that's the way it is always. But Rav Asher always says that, and he always says, Shai likes to quote this, Rav Shai likes to quote this all the time, being the biggest is not the greatest thing. The greatest thing, and this is a great line, quote this, please, Tova, quote this as much as you want. It's not from me, it's from Rav Asher, but you're going to love this. He says, Yoter chashuv ligadel. Yoter chashuv ligadel. Milihiyot gadol. I told you it's a good one, right? Yoter chashuv ligadel. It's more important for a person to be able to keep growing than to be great. And what we say to my patients, if you're perfect now, tomorrow's your greatest hope for tomorrow is maintenance, and it's downhill from there. So, a person needs the ability to know that being the greatest isn't as important or fulfilling as to always grow and have the ability to keep growing. And that's one of the greatest antidotes to perfectionism. Hold on to that. B'yachol me'rosh chodesh, because that's the opportunity to grow. You'd get it. You'd understand. I'm starting now. We turn around and we say that we prove this point. Mitchila ovdei avodah zara hayu avoseinu. We say that what? Once upon a time we were idolaters. Who were our forefathers who were idolaters? Terach. Why is Terach in my Haggadah? Terach's in my Haggadah. It's amazing. Adam Harishon is not in my Haggadah. Terach's in my Haggadah. You know what else is incredible? Adam Harishon, who was created by God, right? He is the ultimate perfection in a human being. And what do you get out of him? Kayin. What does Kayin do?
He kills.
Terach is an Oved Avodah Zarah. What comes out of Terach? Avram Avinu. Right? How does that make sense? How does that make sense? So there was a famous Rav who passed away this year, whose name was Rav Shlomo Korach. Right? Rav Shlomo Korach. He was one of the greats out of the Yemenite community in Israel. Originally originally in Yemen, moved to Israel, set himself up in Israel. He says, you have to understand something. In the home of Adam Harishon, there was a spiritual downfall. What was the spiritual downfall? Look at Kayin. What did Kayin find important? Materialism. Right? Materialism. It was found in Adam Harishon. Why? Because what leads to Adam Harishon's sin? Thank you, but be careful because you're sitting between two parents, one of whom will agree with you, the other one will challenge you, right? But Vatera Ha'isha, Chava saw what? Ki tov ha'etz lama'achal, that the tree looked good to eat, b'chi, ta'ava hu la'inayim, right? It was desirous to the eye. Adam Harishon develops a sense of materialism and lust. And Adam Harishon's home was a home built on a lie, right? Adam lies, Eva lies. Everyone's telling non-truths.
Is it also because everything was just given to them too? They didn't really, in a way, earn it.
They didn't earn it. That wasn't Rabbi Korach's idea, but it certainly is an important idea. So when Adam and Chava get caught, they blame each other. When a child grows up in an atmosphere of constant fighting, of a lack of truth, of materialistic desires, what you get out of it is kind. What do you have about Terach? Terach goes in the opposite direction. Terach is no Ved Avodah Zarah. But what happens to Terach at the end of his life? How so? He leaves with Avram Avinu heading to the land of Israel. He dies in Haran. He doesn't make it. But he had seen the light. Right? So his whole life he's searching for truth. And when you're in a home where people search for truth, even if they don't find it, it's possible that the children can find it. And then Avram Avinu can emerge. And in our generation, it's important to show young people how important the truth is, to show our truth and to strive towards the right and proper things in our lives, a very important issue. And that's why we say, Vo'ekachas Avram Eiver Hanar, that I took Avram from the other side of the river. Avram is referred to as Avram Ha'ivri as a result. Avram is referred to as Ivri because he comes from the other side of the river. What does that mean? So the Medrash says it means that Avram Avinu has the ability to withstand the whole world. The whole world could be opposed to his ideas, and he can hang on to those ideas because he knows that they're true. And he doesn't get swayed by public opinion. Imagine that. Somebody who doesn't get swayed. The whole world was against him. 99.999% of the world said he was wrong. So Michael Feinstein, who has a very strong connection to this community, why? Michael Feinstein Zatzal, who was the son-in-law of the Brisker Rav, a Rosh Hashiva in his own right, and the Rebbe of our Rav, of Rav Teitz, who learned with him Bechavrusa for a number of years in Israel. So Michael Feinstein says, that's what the Gemara says when we talk to about Talmidei Chachamim as Yechidim. Remember remember in Masechta Tainus when we talk about the fast days for the lack of rain? So the Mishnayos tell us, Yechidim Mesanim. The Talmidei Chachamim, the individuals, they fast. Why are Talmidei Chachamim referred to as Yechidim? Because Talmidei Chachamim don't get swayed because everyone feels that way. Talmidei Chachamim proceed on the basis of what Hashem expects from us. And we can all be Talmidei Chachamim in that regard. If you choose to do what Hashem wants from us, if you seek out what the truth is, even against public opinion, you get a chance to be among the Yechidim. And that's something that we want in our lives, because that's what Avram Avinu taught us. We're told, Baruch Shomer Haftachaso Yisrael, thank Hashem, he figured out the Kates. What is Kates? You remember Kates? What's the gematria of Kates? 190, right? If you take 400 and you subtract 190, you get 210. I can't do math either. It's against my contract, right? 210, 210 is the number of years that the Jews were in Egypt, right? God calculated. Now, practically speaking, that's a hard thing to accept. If God figured out the end, the passage of time, it makes it hard for us to not lose hope. What about all the, we thank God, oh, you figured out the end. What about the 210 years in the middle, right? What about all those years with people who lost hope? What about the generations? It's 210 years. Think about the generations that died out in Egypt, right? What about their emunah? What about their bitachon? Where did it get them? Good question, huh? So I bought a book earlier this year by accident. It was the thoughts of Reuven Feinstein Shalita, who unfortunately lost his wife this year in a terrible accident, as a result of a terrible accident. So Reuven Feinstein Shalita notes that this type of statement, the statement of Baruch Shomer Haftachaso, comes. The person says, "Well, what about where it gets you?" That person comes from a person. That the type of a statement comes from a person who can't understand bitachon. Bitachon doesn't mean that Hashem will save you. That's not what it means. It means that I believe that Hashem can save you. It means that you trust Hashem's outcome and that Hashem does whatever is for the best, even if you don't get it that way. Even if the slave, if the slave. Or the person who's unfortunately sick, or the person who's oppressed, or the person who's depressed, they have opportunities to do great things in life. The Baal Bitachon always knows that there's something positive for him or her to do. And he or she is aware that if he or she is still here, then he or she has a purpose in Hashem's plan. And that purpose is lehitiv, to do something special, to make the world a better place. So it doesn't matter who you are, so long as you're... I remember once, I worked with a guy, to be quite honest, the guy was a veteran. We're going back a number of years. I was doing my internship in psychology, so the year was to the year 2000. And this guy had, you name it, this guy shot it in his arm, snorted it, smoked it. You know, who knows what he did with it. And then he came down, you know, he was a nasty person. He, in order to get his fixes, he made it his business to lie, steal, cheat, whatever it was, in order for him to get whatever he needed. So this guy, I remember it. One day I wind up on a palliative unit. What's the palliative unit? The palliative unit basically says that just a matter of time, right? And this guy had started out on the psychiatric unit. That's how I met him. And I go in to see him on the palliative unit, and we're talking, and he says to me, like, there's no point. I said, there's no point? You lived a life. There are a bunch of guys upstairs. They see you as something special. You're a vet. You have something of substance. And he looks at me and he says, do you think they'll let me back up there? And he made a request to go back onto the locked unit. Now think about this. He had his freedom in palliative care, right? And he asked to be transferred back to the psychiatric care unit. And all of a sudden, this guy starts doing my job, right? He's meeting with people constantly, and he's talking to them, and he became like almost like the reverend of the chevra, right? He's giving everyone chizuk. So I said to him, I remember one Friday, I said to him, you know, it's probably Pesach time because I remember when he, you know. So I said to him, look, you know, I'm going to be out next week, but my so and so's taking care of things. So he says to me, so-and-so can do what she needs to do. That's fine. You know, I'll talk to her if I have anything I need to, but I got work here to do. So I said, it's amazing. Like, where did you get this energy from? He said, I figured out that if I had a job to do, I had a job to do. And if you give me the environment, I've got to rise to the occasion. I've got to be the one to turn around. And so long as God gave me what he gave me, I got to give something back. If I have time, whatever time I have left, I should use that time in order for me to be able to do something positive. I come back from my mini vacation. It was probably Pesach time because it was probably Yom Tov then. I get a note in my box from the person who was covering for me. And she says, I just want you to know, this guy passed away. I said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear you. Are you kidding? She said, I've never been to a funeral like that before. I said, what do you mean? She said, they had a memorial service on the locked unit. Right? These are some of the people who are the least stable. She said, there was not a dry eye in the room. And do you know what it means to have, I think the number was like 30 people, each one after the other, get up in front of the room and be maspid somebody. She used the word maspid. She said, to eulogize. She said, you would have been blown away as a rabbi and everything else. She said, it was incredible. The entire staff had to just, because he was not like all the other admissions. This guy had been admitted into that unit probably upwards of 30 to 35 times. You know, in the course of his history, I could check it back on the computer. And all of a sudden, he's back on the unit by choice. And every person on that unit felt that he had been impacted. If a person realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shomer HaVtachaso, and he puts you into that process, then it may not be what you want. The outcome is not necessarily what you want. But he gives you something to do with what you're here to do. And Rav Reuven Feinstein says, it's our opportunity to grow. We need to grab from that. And that's what it means to have haftacha or bitachon in the process. We say, Vayered Mitzrayim, when the Jews went down to Egypt, onus. They went down as onsim. That's not true. How did the Jews go down to Egypt? When Yaakov went down to Egypt, why did he go down to Egypt?
The family.
Because of Yosef, very good. Ruthie says correctly. Because Yaakov Avinu says, Rav Od, Yosef ben Ichai, El Chaver, and Ubeter Mamos, he wasn't forced. He decided to go down. So what does that mean, that he went down onus? He went down, he was forced. That's not what it says. So another individual I only met, whose writing I only met because I live in Elizabeth, the Shemin HaTov, who is Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was the Rav of the Young Israel of Brooklyn in Williamsburg. Now, how many Young Israels exist in Williamsburg is a good question, but he wrote a wonderful series of five volumes, that and a Haggadah, that were all sponsored by Marty and Miriam Knecht. So that's how I got to know his writings a little bit. So Rabbi Weinberger suggests, there, by the way, each one of those ideas are just beautiful. One after another, boom, 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 boom. Just fantastic stuff. So Rabbi Weinberger suggests is that not that he went down as an ones, that he was forced, but Yaakov Avinu didn't get to leave. Anus al pi hadibur vayagarsham. We read it as two separate paragraphs, but it's not anus al pi hadibur. Anus al pi hadibur vayagarsham. It's what he was considered an ones because it says he had to live there. Yaakov only wanted to go down and see Yosef. And then what did he want to do? Turn around and leave and go back up. But Hashem had a different desire. Hashem wanted him in Mitzrayim, and so therefore that was an ones, and that's one of the lessons you need to understand.
Well, Piyadibur means
what? Based on the way Rabbi Weinberger is reintroducing it, it means based on the following words, the next two words in the Haggadah Vayagarsham, which are the words from the Psukim. It's an interesting, different style of read. It says, "Vayhi bayamim harabim ha'hem." It was at those days, Vayamas Melech Mitzrayim, that the king of Egypt died. So Reuven Feinstein, again, he explains a person has to not give up. It says, "Bayamim harabim," those long days, right? A person has to not give up on bitachon just because there's a passage of time, right? The Gemara in Brachos says, "Afilu cherev chada munachas al tzavaro shel adam." If you have a sharp sword on the neck of a person, al yisyaish. Men harachamim, you shouldn't refrain from davening for mercy. Now, sometimes it's the belief in rachamim in the tough moments that brings the rachmanos, right? We have that on Pesach also, on the seventh day. What happens to the Jews, right? They get to the shores of Yam Suf and the sea splits, right? Wrong. What happened when they get to the shores of Yam Suf? They scream, God, help us, right? So God says, what are you screaming at me? Right? Tell B'nai Yisrael to move. So of course, did B'nai Yisrael go into the sea? No, that only in the Disney movie, right? In the Disney movie, it's they sink into the sea, right? Or is it under the sea, something like that? Whatever it is, they go into the sea. But not really, right? Nachshon Ben Aminadav. And does it split as soon as his feet hit the water?
No.
He has to keep walking and walking till he almost drowns, right? Rav Reuven adds that bitachon, like we said before, this is an extension of that idea. Bitachon is the understanding that whatever it takes, I'm doing mine. God, you do yours, right? But whatever you choose to do, I'm still doing mine. And then we say Vayishma Hashem es kolenu, that God hears our words. And the Tanit Ve'Eliyahu explains that Hashem doesn't bring geula as a response to pain or slavery. Hashem brings geula because He finds 10 Jews sitting side by side who are able to sit and learn with one another. You got 10 of us, look at us. We're sitting around for an hour, 1 minute, and 44 seconds, right? And we're able to learn with one another. That it's things like this that bring about Geula. So Rav Shmuel Vosner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Shevet Alevi, who, by the way, passed away on Pesach night, right? So a couple of years ago. So he explains that this was the situation in Mitzrayim. Hashem mentioned that He heard their cries, but He also remembered His bris. And the Mefarshim explained, what bris are we talking about? Well, he remembers his bris. He remembered the bris of Torah. In other words, in a generation where the people don't merit it, the fact that there are groups that band together in order to study Torah and to do chesed, they can help the fledgling group move forward. In Mitzrayim, the Jews lived as sort of belonging to one of three guilds. Guild number one were the Rishayim. What happened to the Rishayim? Makas Choshech, what happened to the Rishayim? They died, right? Then there were some who were not Rishayim. They just didn't know what they were doing. They were Tinokos Shenishbu, right? Everyone serving Avodah Zarah, they served Avodah Zarah. But Hashem showed Chesed, right? And they sort of saw the Tzadikim, who were the third group, and they said, you know, we'd like to follow along with that group. So Rav Ozna says, you have to understand, we have the same situation in our generation today. There are people who are swayed to be very, very off people. But there's a lot of people who belong to that middle group. A lot of people who belong to that middle group. The group that's not swayed so easily, right? They just don't know. They're looking for the right influence. And if we strengthen our chesed, if we strengthen our stand for what it means to stand up for Torah, we'll be able to bring many of them back to us and with us. And we'll be able to get to a different geula, not just from Mitzrayim, the ultimate geula that we're waiting for. And that's what we talk about next in that Haggadah when we say, Vayotzi'enu Hashem mi Mitzrayim. God took us out of Egypt. And I want to quote a thought from Rav Yashiv Knoll. Who is Rav Yashiv Knoll? Rav Yashiv Knoll was the Rav of Kibbutz Kfar Etzion. He passed away earlier this year. And he said that, you know, he was a huge posek. He was a Mechaber Svarim. He was a Rav of a very, very large kibbutz that later grew into a kfar, that later housed some of the great minds of today. And he says, yeah, I was a pretty mediocre student. I was a mediocre student. And so how come he was able to go ahead and become this person? He said, I want you to know, that's Hashem's chesed. So he says, why do I tell this to people? I'm not an art score book. Why am I telling this to people? He says, I want people to internalize the message, right? The message, parents regarding their children and every person regarding himself. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't reveal himself to us. We need to do all that we can. But there's no person who doesn't have a place in the world. The world is full of surprises. We have to be ready to lift up the catch that rolls into our hands so that we'll be able to make things better for all those who surround us in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us out. He chooses that we're there. He wants us in that moment. If he chooses us to catch that ball, to be that person, to be in Kfar Etziona, we have to be ready and be ready for that opportunity. If he sticks us in Hillside, New Jersey by accident, I'm here by accident. 15 years, it's a long accident, right? But every day I turn around, I say, you know what, Baruch Hashem, it literally was a mistake. Somebody moved a piece of paper, two pieces of paper, to the wrong box. Next thing I know, I'm in Hillside, New Jersey. And I must be here for some purpose. You are all in the same boat that I'm in. Maybe not the same person, right? Because none of you know Rabbi Levin, right? But you're all, for whatever crazy reason, you have to understand, Rabbi Knoll says, we all have to rise to the occasion. We all have to understand that wherever we are, it's not important to figure out how we're getting out of it. But if I'm here, what am I doing in this moment? And how can I grow in this moment? And how can I make things stronger in the moment? How many times Moshe Rabbeinu mentioned in the Haggadah?
None.
Really not really not. You're correct, officially none, but as a pasuk, as a proof, we say, Vayaminu b'Hashem u'b'Moshe avdo. Now, how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is primarily absent from the Haggadah story? So, earlier this year, we experienced a terrible tragedy when we lost Ari Folt, Hashem Yimkom Damav, in a terrible, tragic accident. It's interesting. In the very last recorded Dvar Torah that Ari Folt gave, he explained that it's not a coincidence that Moshe Rabbeinu isn't mentioned in the Haggadah even once, and it's not a coincidence that we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu is buried, because Hashem did not want us putting Moshe at the center of or worshiping him at his grave. And so in his last moments, Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us an important Jewish principle. The nation and the Torah are more important than the charisma of the leader. When it says Vayaminu ba'Hashem uv'Moshe, it's not that Vayaminu ba'Hashem uv'Moshe. It's Vayaminu ba'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. They believe that Moshe's whole existence was to serve Hashem, and Eved doesn't have his own purpose. And Eved just serves the will of Hashem. And that's what a lesson that we have in our own lives. What an incredible thought. Who would have thought that that would have been the last one? We say uva osos, right? That Hashem took us out with osos, with signs. What does that refer to? Zeh Hamatat. This is a reference to the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu. How are osos different from makos? Are osos different than makos? So my Rosh Yeshiva from high school, Rav Yechiel Yitzchak Per, who has now been running a yeshiva now for, was it 50 years they just celebrated? 50 years? So we share common roles there. So Rav Per used to explain to us that the signs that were given to Moshe were primarily there to knock off the hubris, the gaiva of of Paro, the Egyptian ruler, and to rebuild the spirit of the oppressed Jewish nation. What does that mean? The oppressed usually hang on to the hope that there's an end to their oppression. And seeing the water from the Nile, which ran clear of the blood of their children, turn into dam, was a sign to them that what goes around comes around. So remember, Paro makes a gezerah, kol ha'ben ha'yilod ha'yorot ha'shlichu. What color should the Nile have run? Red. And then eventually what happened? It fleetingly passed. Here, I'm throwing your kids in. They mean nothing. They're going to go back to being clear. And then you see, Paro gets told, Moshe's told, take the water from the Yor, v'shafachta v'yabasha, and pour it on the land. V'hayu amayim asher tikach min ha'yor, v'hayu l'dam v'yabashas. The Jew watching this says to himself, it's karma. Right? Look at that. It's even in that small little thing, the Makos challenged the very nature that the Egyptians had assumed was commonplace and predictable. What goes around comes around. You think nature is what you want in life? What goes around comes around. Uba osos zehamata. A couple more. Should I go on? I have a couple more. Yeah? So we sing Dayenu, and of course the ever popular Dayenu phrase, the one that gets asked about most often is, Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai, had Hashem brought us close to har Sinai, velo nasan lanu es haTorah, and he not given us the Torah, Dayenu. Why? So one of the answers that people like to give is, what do you mean? Because when we got to har Sinai, what did we say? Nase v'nishma, right? But Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says that had we gotten close to har Sinai and not gotten the Torah, we would have still gotten Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, right? And that would have been Dayenu. Why? So my late Rebbe, Rav David Kav, was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Kerem B'Yavna, so he said that you have to understand there's a higher appreciation for the concept of a mitzvah. The Torah gives us, the Torah's shlemus, the Torah's idea of being complete, gives meaning and purpose to each and every mitzvah, right? So, but also, within, there's a wider goal of life. In other words, it's not just that the mitzvah, I now know how to perform this mitzvah better, but if I put the mitzvahs together, I have like a whole new understanding of what the world's about, and what God's master plan for the world is about. And had I gotten some of the mitzvahs without the entire master plan, right, there still would have been value. I might not have gotten the whole thing, but I would have understood seven pieces better. And so, however, the idea of creating a context of Torah, the idea of creating a context of Kedusha, the ultimate master plan of what we're trying to do, that's not enough just to have the mitzvos. We need the whole Torah. So a couple of mitzvos would have helped us have more understanding in our lives. Marin Irvin says, the Rohr Wenger was the one who first highlighted this Gemara to me 15 years ago, 16 years ago, right? Devorah spoke, and she said, the Gemara even says that had we not gotten the Torah, we would have learned midos from, the animals, right? Yeah, we would have learned midos from the animals, but that doesn't mean that we would have gotten the context, that there's a higher purpose. We would have learned how to act, but it wouldn't have impacted us. The same thing if we would have had a couple of mitzvahs here and there, we would have gotten some of the picture, but we would have had so many gaps to fill in. So Dayenu, that we would have had something, says Rav David, but we would have had to fill in even more.
The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, that didn't predate Matan Torah as in terms of...
As an obligation? Of course it predated Matan Torah. But a Jew was never obligated in the full-fledged Sheva Mitzvos as part of Am HaNivchar until Matan Torah. So when the Jews were in Mara, they got some of those mitzvos as a nation, right? Individuals couldn't go ahead and do whatever they felt like, but as a nation, to say that we can fill in the gaps, right? To learn from them, to start putting pieces together. That happens not when you're just receiving seven ways of functioning, seven heuristics. Right? Which is the way the nations of the world have Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. We use those same seven mitzvos as part of the missing puzzle pieces in order to complete the other 606 that come together. Then give us a whole perspective and a picture of the way things are supposed to go. We're told the Jews leave Mitzrayim, they eat the matzah. Why do we eat matzah? Matzah zushan ochlem al shema. Why do we eat matzah? Because they ran out of Mitzrayim, the gam tzeda lo asu lahem, and they didn't make food for themselves. Right? Take a look at this of this wonderful sacrifice that the Jews make. So Rashi tells us that what the reward for that that display is what kodesh Yisrael laHashem. That's what gives us our kedusha. That's what Yirmiyahu says, right? Kodesh Yisrael laHashem, reishis tvuaso. What's the condition? But why is there a connection between kodesh kedusha and bitachon, and faith? Why are those two things put together? So Shlomo Volba, whose grandson will be here on Thursday night, and whose wife passed away earlier this year, Rav Shlomo Volba Zatzal explains that Kedusha is the process of being devoted to Hashem in an absolute manner. Kedusha is being devoted to Hashem absolutely. And when one is dedicated to Torah, and he's a kadosh, one who is dedicated to that which we call hedonism, such a person is not a kadosh. If you're fully dedicated to hedonism, you're called a kadesh. Lo yeh kadesh b'vnei Yisrael. So there is a direct connection. Hashem is the ultimate kadosh because he's separated from human behavior. And b'nei Yisrael are told to be like Hashem. And where does that dedication come from? Where does a Jew get that dedication to be like Hashem? Well, that's the bitachon we've been talking about all night. That's where you get it, right? When we're completely devoted to Hashem, it raises us to the status of kedoshim. And that's why the lach ma'anya, this matzah, is the symbol that reminds us that we once had that situation. Ko amar Hashem, zacharti lachesed neurayach avas kelulosayach, lechtech acharay bamidbar, beretz lo zruah. This is that perspective. And so therefore we carry this with us, and we get to this point, and we declare, lefichach anachnu chayavim, after we've gotten to all this, and this is the last thought I'll express tonight, right? Lefichach anachnu chayavim, that's why we have responsibility, after we've been here, and after we've been here, and after we've been there, we have an obligation. We have an obligation to do what? To sing the Hallel, to offer the perspective. And you just need to understand, often in our own heads we think that there's a section called Rabban Gamliel, right? I remember as a kid, right? So if one of my younger siblings, who now won't admit that he was in that role, my relative, right? Just walked in. But I remember when my brother was a little kid, right? So if my mother had to step away from the table to take care of him, right, my father would stop the Seder at Rabban Gamliel, right? He would stop and say, you have to come to the table for Rabban Gamliel. So my mother would sit down, Pesach, Matzah, Maror, she'd wait for those couple of paragraphs, and then at Lefichach, if she had to get up, my father said to her, you have to understand, Lefichach is part of the obligation of Rabban Gamliel. You have to understand that we're highlighting not only the physical Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the change that came in the psyche of Bnei Yisrael. When we were on the bottom, now we're on top. But when it comes to our relationship with Hashem, that's not the end of the story. There's no end of the story. When we're on top, we're not at the end. We're not at the pinnacle. We're beginning at that point in time. And that's what happens to us at our Seder. We don't end the Seder with Magid, with the Jews living happily ever after in the desert. Right? That's not how the story ends. We're the next chapter. We finish singing Hallel. Because now we sing it not only out of if we do the Seder right, we're not singing Hallel because we're obligated to sing Hallel. If we did the Seder right, we recognize, holy cow, we have a lot to... Well, we already recognized holy cow 2 weeks ago. But we recognize at this point in time, right, that we're at a period of joy. It reminds me of a thought. I grew up in a community that had a number of elementary schools. So the elementary school I did not go to was down my block. And they had the latest minion in town when I was on vacation, and they were not. So I had a chance on a number of occasions to meet the manal of this elementary school. He's a wonderful person. His name was Rav Chanina Hertzberg. He passed away earlier this year as well. So his Talmidim loved him to death. And his Talmidim used to tell, they made it their business. So I remember one guy told me, when he passed, he said to me, you know Rabbi Hertzberg, I was a guy, and since 8th grade I was 6'5". And Rabbi Hertzberg would meet me in the hallway, and he would always, sort of pat me in the side, because that's the type of person he was. And he would say to me, hey buddy, your height is based not on how high you can pick somebody up. Your height is based on how high you lift somebody, not on how many times you look down at them. The end of our Seder is not the way we look down, that we're on top, now we can look down on everybody. The end of our Seder is that we're that much closer to the high that we can keep looking up, and we're not as far-sighted as we were when we started. We're about to hit that Seder point. We're about to hit that point where we set that time when we started talking about the preparation. And we want to get to that point where we ask Hashem at the end of the Magid, Ken Yagienu Hashem Elokeinu L'Regalim Acherim Haboim L'Kraseinu L'Shachalom Smechim B'Vinyan Yirecha V'Sasim B'Avodasecha. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through our Avoda at the Seder and beyond, pick up ourselves, pick up our spirits, and through our preparation, deepen our emuna and our faith, and Be'ezus Hashem, we'll be able not only to experience the galus of the past, but we will this year get the chance to fulfill the dictum of Chazal, B'Nisan Nigalu, B'Nisan Asidin Ligael. I thank you all very much. Thursday night, Rabbi Wolbe will be here. You don't want to miss that. And Be'ezus Hashem, Shabbos morning, Rav Teitz, Shalita, Shabbos afternoon, we will look at Haseba two ways. A knockout perspective on Haseba an hour before Mincha, and during the expanded Shalosh Odes, we will understand Haseba like we've never understood it before. All I can promise you is you don't want to sleep through it. We'll stop here.